Hello, Health Investor. Welcome to another episode of the Health Investment Podcast. Today, you're going to hear from Dr. Allison Escalante. Dr. Escalante is a pediatrician, author of the upcoming book, Start, How to Be the Parent Your Child Needs in a World That Won't Stop Pushing, TEDx speaker, writer, and woman on a mission to ease the epidemic of anxiety that has convinced us we are always failing and is stealing our joy. She's developed a three-step method to help parents raise their kids mindfully and skillfully and enjoy doing it. In the episode, Dr. Escalante shares why parents are more anxious today than ever, when parenting advice is helpful and when it's not, how to approach any situation with your child feeling calm and confident, and more. If you're liking this podcast, I'd be so grateful if you'd write a review and share it with a friend. Enjoy the episode. I'm Brooke Simonson, certified nutrition coach and your host of the Health Investment Podcast. If you're ready to look and feel your best without any confusion, frustration, or stress, you're in the right place. Each week, I interview experts and share no-nonsense, research-backed tips so that you can finally lose weight for good, eat healthy long-term, have the high energy you crave, and feel like $1 million. I'm so happy you're here with me today. Don't forget to hit subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Hi, Dr. Escalante. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Health Investment Podcast.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for having me.
I am thrilled to be diving into this conversation. I always love talking about different parenting approaches, you know, child development, all sorts of things. I used to be a teacher. And so this is a topic that really interests me. And I know my audience loves podcasts about these topics as well. Would you start off by telling us a bit about your background? I know you're a pediatrician, but you also really focus on parenting and child development. I guess just what caused you to start out as a pediatrician and then to kind of evolve into this role of author as well?
Well, I think there's a couple key things that led to it. First, just starting out as a pediatrician, I had the honor to train at places like Duke and University of Chicago, where we just saw the most intense of intense pediatric medicine, you know. And not long before I finished residency, I mean, I was in the pediatric ICU and, you know, where kids were fighting for their lives and just really the most intense situations. And then I went out and I started at a general pediatrics practice, and I had folks coming in with their kids. Doctor, she's had 3 hours of sniffles. Let's nip it in the bud. And with real anxiety about this, right? Doctor, you know, she's kind of like, well, she kind of toddles when she walks. Is that okay? Is there something wrong developmentally? Well, they're called toddlers because they toddle, right? And these were not exaggerations of the kinds of questions people had. And at first I was a little flabbergasted because I'm like, you know, I'm coming from this, this life and death situation. And I'm like, well, it's a sniffle. Don't people have any perspective, right? And I quickly realized that I was looking at this wrong. And my older partners were saying, you know, gosh, the parents get, they really do get anxious, more anxious every year. And I mean, this was long before things like the pandemic shot our anxiety through the roof. So, you know,
before there was a real global pandemic.
But I have to admit, to my personal embarrassment, I maybe was a little bit less sympathetic than I should have been about this parent anxiety. And then I had a baby. And oh my goodness, the wave of biological anxiety about that baby. You know, it was like nothing I'd ever experienced. And every parent knows this, you know. And I said, okay, hold on. Like, what's going on here? Now, rewind just a bit, because the other element of my background that plays into this is that when I was an undergraduate, I didn't study chemistry or biology like most doctors. I actually studied the culture of idea, the I sorry, the history. I studied the history of ideas and culture. That's kind of something you can get away with a major like that at Princeton, and then I have it, my certificate is very niche, but I had been trained to think about how ideas move through cultures and change people's behavior and change history, you know? And I said, why? I mean, my parents worried about us, but why are we crushingly worried? And why do I feel like such a failure as a new mother when my parents weren't like that? And the parents I knew in my parents' generation, they weren't like that, right? So what is going on? And so this training to look at culture got me thinking, because it'd be one thing if it was 30% of parents that were really worried, but it was like 100% of parents that were really worried. And so that's not individual people. That's not people not having good coping skills. That's something bigger going on. And so I started looking around and diving into the parenting advice and the parenting culture and realizing before I knew it that this culture is what's driving the anxiety, a culture of criticism, a culture of parenting perfectionism. It tells us that if we're not worried all the time, we're not loving our kids enough. It tells us, well, you should do this, you should do that, you should never do that other thing. You're going to mess your kid up for life. No matter what you do, you're going to get it wrong, but you have to get it right and you're supposed to know. And all these shoulds contradict each other, right? So if you like look up a parenting question, you're going to see contradictory advice out there. And so that just, it's a crazy making, know-in type of culture. It makes parents extremely anxious. And it's like a storm just bombarding us with these shoulds. So I coined the term the should storm.
Wow.
And that's kind of how I got started.
How interesting. Yeah. So before, when you had all these parents coming into you as a doctor with all of these worries, before you had children, did you just think, oh, I'm not going to be like that. I'm going to be totally easy peasy. I'm not going to be anxious. I know all the science behind what's going on. And then was that a shock to you when you actually felt as anxious as some of your patients' parents did?
I mean, I knew that motherhood came with some anxiety, right? But yes, it was a shock to realize that I was as anxious as my patients' parents. And I always used to joke with my patients' parents at that time that I just worried about a different set of things. Doctor moms tend to worry about a lot of things you've never heard of. And so no, I didn't, like classically, people get really upset if they find that their child has a bruise when they pick them up from daycare, right? I don't care. Not dead, it's a bruise. That's fine. It's part of childhood. Nope, no biggie. Not a problem for me, right? But I would worry about rare diseases that other people hadn't heard of, right? And at some point, I don't know how many years into motherhood it was, I actually joined a private community online of physician moms. And it was the most amazing thing because this was a new community and we're all confessing to each other that we all look at each other and say, that physician mom has it all together and I'm falling apart and messing up every day. And it turned out we all felt the same way, right? And all of this was before movies like Bad Moms started making fun of this culture. But even now, yeah, we've started to make fun of it, but we're still caught up in it, right? We're still earnestly trying to find the right thing for our child, which is good. We just need to find a healthier way to do that without driving ourselves and our kids crazy.
In terms of, I know you kind of coin it old school parenting. So maybe your parents or your grandparents, how they parented. I know there were still moms talking to other moms, dads talking to dads. There were still parenting books out there, much like we have today. So what caused the increase in perfectionism and anxiety somewhere along the way?
Yeah, I mean, if you really dive into the history of parenting, I mean, the shift toward what's called scientific parenting happened 100 years ago, where the idea came out that parents need scientific expert advice to be good parents, right? But the shift I'm talking about, where it's the difference between the parents that raised the Gen Xers versus the parents that raised the millennials, right? And so in general, because there's always going to be variation from household to household, but in general. And so I've talked to so many people from my parents' generation, and they said, yeah, we worried, but like, you know, there was really one book everyone used. It was Dr. Spock. Everyone used the same book. And if you had a question, you just asked your neighbor what they did, right? And you just did what your neighbors did. And, you know, I knew one woman. She was her family immigrated from India. And she said, well, I got here. And I said, well, they do parenting differently here. So I just asked my neighbors and they told me to get Dr. Spock. And I got that. And I did what my neighbors did, right? But the other thing that they've expressed is that parents then really did feel like, most of them did feel some confidence that they were going to figure it out. And I think that's a confidence that was lost at a certain point. I think that the other thing is disciplinary practices. There was much more of a continuity throughout time, right? So old school parenting, the biggest thing that for me characterizes it is a general consensus that it's appropriate to punish children, right? That would be depending. Now, by the time I was raised, because I'm Gen X, some parents didn't necessarily believe in spanking anymore. Most still did, right? So punishment would be spanking or standing in the culture or corner or soap in the mouth or some form of corporal punishment. But also, even in families that didn't do that, there was very much everybody got shamed. Shaming was normal. It was appropriate, right? I mean, that's how you taught kids. You said, what's wrong with you? Why can't you do that better? You know, like, you lousy kid, you're being a bad kid, blah, blah, blah. Like, that was normal. That was acceptable. And that was seen as important because if you spared the rod, you spoiled the child, right? And the shift happened for a combination of good and not so good reasons, right? So by the time you get to the millennials as children, now you have a combination. You have parents trying to do it the new way. You also have parents that are still kind of old school. And then you have parents that are a confusing combination of both, right?
Yeah. But
by then, parents had really gotten the message that a child's emotional well-being matters. And therefore, shaming is probably not good for them, right? Which is correct. We don't really learn very effectively through shaming. We learn how to shut down our emotions and our thinking and comply, right? But we don't really learn how to truly solve problems, right? So there was this movement to say, like, we know we need to do it differently. And into that mix came attachment parenting. And attachment parenting was a distortion and in some cases an outright untrue, what they claimed. They took research that had been done and then they claimed their parenting was based on it, but it wasn't. So that gave people the sense that attachment parenting is scientific. It's coming out of all this attachment research, right? But no. And attachment parenting basically was this high intensity parenting where you have to comfort a child the moment they make a noise. You must never let them experience, you know, discomfort. You must breastfeed. You must stay home with your baby, you know, things like that. And that's oversimplifying it. I don't want to be unfair. Attachment parenting, like all things, there are good things about it, but it's overly intense and it creates very anxious parents with kids that often don't get a chance to develop their own skills because the parent is diving in to help all the time, you know? And that became helicopter parenting. And, you know, and then ever since then, it can be one version of parenting after another. There's always a hot new trend in parenting.
Right.
Ever since then, it's all what we call from the research, what we call intensive parenting.
Okay.
Right. It's intense for the parents. It's intense for the kids.
Right.
We're intensively investing in our children. We spend, you know, working moms today spend significantly more time with their children than stay-at-home moms did in the 70s. You know?
Interesting. I want to take a quick break from the episode to tell you about a company I've been impressed by for years. Thrive Market is an online shopping platform that offers thousands of products at 25 to 50% off retail prices. For just $60 a year, you get access to a wide variety of premium pantry staples, supplements, beauty products, and home goods at unbeatable prices. To put things in perspective, I save about $20 to $30 per shipment, which means my annual membership fee pays for itself after just two orders. My favorite part about Thrive Market is that for every paid membership, they donate a membership to a low-income family, veteran, or teacher. So not only do you save money on your purchases, but you also make healthy products accessible to everyone. To read my full Thrive Market review, steal my shopping list of over 150 items, and save additional money on your first order, visit thehealthinvestment.com/Thrive Market or just click through the link in the show notes. Now, back to the episode.
Yeah. And we now feel responsible for our child's entire well-being, spiritually, emotionally, academically, physically, and anything goes wrong is our fault.
It's intense. It's intense.
It's intense.
Yeah.
Yes.
Even just talking about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about, so is now the newer trend more like this gentle parenting trend?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the latest term that's being thrown out. Gentle parenting is, other parenting trends have been like by one particular person. Right.
Okay.
And so gentle parenting is different because it's, it comes from a lot of different sources. It can mean a lot of different things. I love the idea of it, right? Because gentle parenting emphasizes being respectful to your child, you know, not recognizing that they're a person with a body and a rights and not, you know, not violating that space or that personhood, right? And really respecting and cherishing that. And it also emphasizes helping kids understand and regulate their emotions. And I think all of that's super important. And some versions of it are super intense and guide parents to make a big mistake, what we call in pediatrics, the too much talking mistake, right? So you're driving your child crazy because you're talking at them, you know, for too long or, you know, over explaining and things like that. Sometimes at ages where they're a little young for that.
Right. Or,
well, I mean, depending on how old your kids are, I can tell you mine are teenagers and they never explain too, they never appreciate too much talking. They want me and mom to get to the point. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm wondering too. I mean, the shift must have come in the advent of Google and social media where in the past you said, you know, there was one book and you turn to your neighbor, maybe you ask your pediatrician, you had maybe three sources of information and now you have thousands. And so even if you're doing something one way, and let's say you feel confident of how you just handled an interaction with your child, then you can hop on Instagram and somebody's saying, if you do this thing you just did, you're going to ruin your child forever and mess them up psychologically. And so does that also put this constant seed of doubt that you're never doing the right thing?
Absolutely. I mean, social media is a huge driver and social media has changed how we interact, right? So people will say things in public spaces that they would never have said to people 20 years ago, right? So it's, I know lots of moms who for their own mental health are not on social media. They don't do moms groups. You know, we've both seen on social media people, well-meaning people, just get torn to shreds, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and often, by the way, the criticism on social media is dead wrong anyway. Like,
right.
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. I have a funny story in 1 second. But the other thing is people will then act that way in public, right? So I have stories in my book about moms who are out on maternity leave and they're walking their baby in the neighborhood. They've just finally, they managed to get out of the house to go for a short walk. And the neighbor walks up and criticizes something, right? I mean, my husband, it's a story I talked about in the TEDx talk I gave on this subject. And, you know, my husband was at the grocery store and a woman came up and screamed at him because the baby didn't have socks on, right? And it was like 90 degrees out, right?
Oh my gosh.
And apparently that's a thing. I cannot tell you how many parents came out of the woodwork and said they'd been criticized about baby socks in public places, right?
Oh my gosh.
You know, and what's, I think, the most alarming about it is how, because the culture is seemed to be more about criticism than about being truly informed, very often that criticism is dead wrong. So here's an example. In one of my mom's groups, actually, a mom recently posted a picture of her cat with a lion cut. So that's where the cat's middle is totally shaved, right?
Okay, yeah.
Looks kind of like a little lion. And she asked, she said, you know, my cat's due to get this grooming and get a new lion cut. Can someone recommend a groomer? It was a bloodbath. I mean, just an absolute bloodbath. The comments were brutal. Like, you should have that cat taken away from you. How could you, don't you know not to shave a cat? How could you do that to your animal? You terrible, terrible person, right? And what those people didn't know is I privately messaged the mom and said, hey, could you please tell me the name of any groomer you find that will do this, because my cat needs this. Why? Why did she get a lion cut? She got a lion cut because her cat was a long-haired cat that would not allow her to groom the belly. Hmm. And so he had painful mats, right? So and my cat was like that. He was violent if I tried to brush him, right? Hmm. And so he would have these painful balls of hair that were pulling on him. And he had gotten to where he wouldn't even play because it hurts so much to move, right?
Yeah.
So what I did is I took him to the groomer and I got him a lion cut and I got him shaved. And if I'd posted about it, I would have been ripped to shreds, right? Mm-hmm. But what right. I did was what my cat actually needed. Right. I met his genuine need and he looked a little silly, but oh, he was so happy.
Yeah.
He was running around playing. He was like acting like 10 years younger, you know, like, and he was free of pain.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Sometimes in parenting, we have to meet our kids' genuine needs
mm-hmm.
and not let our culture undermine, you know, our efforts to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'd love if you could talk a little bit more about your method. So it's called Sigh, See, Start. And you have a book about this as well. So you're going to describe it somewhat for us, but everybody, I'm going to link the book in the show notes. So to read more, everybody will click through there. But what is this method you describe?
So it's helpful to realize that there's a culture going on and that all of that anxiety is not all your fault. You're not just an anxious person. You have a culture driving that, right?
Okay.
But what do you do about it, right? It's not enough to say, okay, don't listen to the culture, you know, just do what you do. That is not super helpful because we still know that there are things that are better or not as good for kids. So we needed something we could do then to shift out of all that anxiety into a wiser type of parenting. And that's what Sigh, Start is. So it goes like this. Every time you feel a should, or you feel unsure, or you feel anxious, sigh, see, and start. So sigh. Take a deep breath in your belly. Let it go long and slow. When you take a long, slow out breath, you actually send a signal to your nervous system that everything's okay. And so that sigh, we can do it like it's a sigh of relief. And when we do that, we're connecting with our body, we're coming into the present, and we're shifting out of that anxiety. Then see. So see your child, see what's going on with them. See the body language, see the situation. See is not a necessarily about visual seeing for our visually impaired parents. It's about noticing. But I use that word because, three S's.
Of course.
So
God, alliteration's the best. Yeah.
alliteration, exactly, more memorable. So we're noticing what's going on in a mindful way. So mindfulness is about observing without immediately trying to judge or change, right? So that's why we say when you're mindful, you're accepting the present. You're saying, oh, this is what's actually happening, right? Not what should be happening, not what I think is happening, but what am I noticing is happening? Okay. And even just doing that for a very short moment, is enough to really shift the way we approach our kids. Because then when we get to taking action, instead of just reacting to the shoulds in our head, we're now hopefully responding a little more calmly to the child right in front of us. And so that's when you start. And you start something. Maybe you start thinking about what's appropriate here. Maybe you start trying something different than you've done before. Maybe you start applying that great piece of parenting advice you read. Parenting advice is not bad. It's just that you need to be able to choose wisely what you use and what you don't use, right? Sometimes the best way to start is to do nothing for a little bit. That is a good one for me because I tend to talk too much. And so, if you can't tell from this podcast. And so, for me, sometimes the best thing with my kids, especially if everybody's like overheated and stuff, is to just be quiet for a second and give everybody a breath, right? Sometimes my kids come up with their own solutions when I do that, But the main thing with start is that it's not about what you do, it's about how you do it. And then what you do with the information you get from that. So if I'm connected and present with you, I'm going to generally make better decisions and you're going to be able to tell that I'm really with you and I'm trying, right? And then if I start something and it works, great. I've learned something. I'm building my own confidence in my ability as a parent, right? I can store that away for future use. If I try something and it totally backfires, right? I might feel bad. I might say, oh, I should have done it that way. But we know what to do if we feel a should. We sigh, see, and start again. And so everything becomes about learning and growing with your child. Suddenly, it's not about getting it right or perfect the first time. That doesn't matter. Who cares? It's about really getting to know your child. What works for them, what works well for you in different situations, and growing confidence in your ability to do that. And that's great too, because, if you have more than one kid, different things are going to work with different kids, So, yeah, it's kind of a way of like running a little scientific experiment every time we try something with our kids,
No, I love it. I'd also love to kind of give you a tangible example and to hear how you would use that versus maybe what we've done in the past. So I'm going to just think, let's say you're trying to put the jacket on your toddler. You're in a restaurant, you're in a public place, there's people all over, and they're just like throwing themselves on the ground, throwing a tantrum. They won't put the jacket on. And it's cold outside. And so that should comes in to your mind. Like they should wear the jacket. It's cold. I am going to be a bad mom if I don't put the jacket on because it's cold outside. And then you're getting embarrassed, the kid's screaming on the ground. So how do you apply that? Like, how do you kind of approach that scenario?
Okay, so do you want to pretend to be the mom or should I pretend to be the mom?
You can be the mom.
Okay, so I'm the mom. So this is a very vivid and real scenario for me. I cannot tell you how many times I had that scenario.
Yeah, I think I've seen
Right.
it. Somebody, yeah,
Oh
I
my
think everybody's had
goodness.
it. Yeah.
Yes. I don't know what it is with my co kids and their coats, right? So if I let that should drive me, I might keep struggling with my toddler to put the coat on, or I might, if my husband was there, I might, bark at him about it. Help me, blah, 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 right? And then, like, just not super effective, right? But if I can take a moment and say, whoa, okay, this isn't working, I'm going to sigh. And when I'm really wound up, I find sighing 3 times in a row is super helpful, right? So I'm going to sigh till I'm a little calmer. And maybe I'm noticing people around the restaurant judging me, so I'm going to sigh again because that doesn't feel good. And then I'm going to see and I'm going to say, okay, this is a toddler who is out of control. And okay, that's what I'm seeing. Their body is wild and they're all over the place. And then I'm going to start thinking about, well, what's worked in the past when they're out of control, right? Well, and what hasn't worked? Okay, well, what hasn't worked is forcing them to do anything, right? That hasn't worked. And what has worked is giving them a little space, or maybe giving them choices, right? So I might, maybe I try and I try to give my toddler a choice, right? But gosh, he's so out of control. He's not listening and he just yells at me if I try to talk to him. So that didn't work. Okay, I'm gonna sigh. Let's see. Okay, he's still wild, and I'm gonna start again.
Outside of hosting this podcast, I work as a nutrition coach specializing in evidence-based, sustainable weight loss. If you're ready to stop yo-yo dieting and start living a healthy, active lifestyle you're proud of, I'd love to work with you in one of my programs. Unlike restrictive, one-size-fits-all diets that only provide short-term results, I help you adopt science-backed nutrition and lifestyle habits that work for your unique likes, dislikes, and time constraints so you can lose weight permanently, have high energy throughout the day, feel completely in control of cravings, and stay consistent long-term. To learn more, visit thehealthinvestment.com or follow me on Instagram and TikTok at The Health Investment.
And so I'll share a solution that I've used in this situation successfully. And that is basically say, okay, buddy, well, I'm getting my coat on and we're going to leave now. And you are welcome to come with us and you can either put your coat on or not. I'll just come on with us and I'll carry the coat. And a lot of mothers right now will be like, oh my gosh, but the cold, right? And I mean, I'm from Illinois. So when it's cold, I mean, we could be negative 10 here, right? But what I've decided to start there is I'm gonna start using that advice I've learned about natural consequences, right? If he won't put his coat on, I'm gonna let him experience the natural consequence of the cold, right? It works every time. They take 2 steps out the door and they ask for their coat. Okay. So they don't have time to freeze or get hypothermia or anything, right? Every time. We did the same thing with shoes. They wouldn't put their shoes on, right? So we would get them in the car to go to daycare and bring the shoes, right? And as soon as they had to walk on the sidewalk to go to daycare, they're like in from the car. They're like, "Mommy, can I have my shoes, please?" Right? But I wouldn't have had the wherewithal to think of that if I was like if I hadn't been able to calm myself down, right?
And then I'm sure some people are listening now and they're thinking, okay, but then you're just letting the kid win. And if the kid wins all the time, they're just going to walk all over you.
Well, I think in that case, I wouldn't call that letting the kid win because the kid puts their shoes on. I won. right?
Yeah.
You're teaching them that, oh, look, when mommy says there's this association now, when mommy says it's cold, put your coat on, I go outside and it's extremely cold and I want my coat. And we're starting to then, you know, if we do that enough times, we're starting to learn something, right? But the other thing is, the idea that our kids shouldn't win is an interesting one, because to really learn the kinds of skills we want our kids to have for adulthood, they actually need to feel like they can win. In psychology, we call this a sense of agency, a sense that I can be an agent in my world and I can affect change, right? So by letting that kid walk out of that restaurant without his coat on, I showed the child respect and gave them a sense of agency. And yeah, I let them win, but I won too.
Yeah.
This is
they won for 2 minutes.
Right. This is completely different from if I stayed in that restaurant and kept pleading with the kid while they tantrumed on the floor. That would really be letting them win. That
right.
would really be giving up my power as a parent, right, to the child. Now the child has done what they wanted, which is, I don't want to put my coat on, so I'm just going to blow up the whole situation, right? So I think we need to reframe sometimes what winning looks like. What I'm not talking about is no standards, right? I'm not talking about loosey-goosey parenting. But it's a way of understanding that a child doesn't learn when they're dysregulated. So if they're flipping out on the floor, they're not learning anything, right? And they couldn't learn until I gave them an option that allowed them to calm down enough to go outside and process, oh, it's cold. I don't want my jacket. They also wouldn't have learned if we scooped them up and dragged them out to the car. Which is not to say that's not appropriate sometimes with a toddler, right? We're not always going to be able to learn in every experience. Sometimes you just got to pick them up, stick them in the car seat, and get home, right?
Yeah. And I think then also not judging yourself or blaming yourself for either reaction, it sounds like, because that's where the should comes in of like, oh, I should have handled this better. I should have done that thing I read in the book, but I ended up picking them up and putting them in the car. And so now I'm a bad parent. And so releasing that also after the fact.
Because especially over things like that with young children, we have so many learning opportunities with them. We don't have to get the message across every single time. And I do think that's one of the features of today's version of intensive parenting is this pressure to make every moment that learning experience. And that's exhausting for the parent. And frankly, it's exhausting for the kid.
You know? I'd be curious. So the SciSee start, and then you say, you know, put the parenting practices you've learned into place when you start.
Yes.
How do you separate the noise from what actually works in terms of, you know, the attachment parenting, the intensive parenting versus having maybe a more gentle parenting approach where you're respecting the child and validating them and giving them agency, but you're not too loosey-goosey? Like, how do you figure out these are the things that are worth starting and trying versus the things that are not worth doing?
So I don't think you're going to have that right away. Right?
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I think any parenting advice that offers a quick fix, you need to beware. Because children are highly complex and they change every time you get to a good state with them. Like they change it up. They have a developmental burst and suddenly we have new exciting challenges. But I think that's one of the things that the book actually has to offer is that the book goes into a deep dive on a lot of those questions, right? Well, what are my standards? What are my like things that that are the make or break issues versus, you know, the stuff we can flex on? How do we solve problems with our kid? You know, what does regulation look like? And how do I do this regulation stuff with the kid, you know? But I think that what I've noticed again and again with parents is that just by connecting to themselves first, not skipping the sigh. This is so important because a lot of moms want to skip the sigh. They want to go right to the observing and the doing, right? No, you matter. I know our culture says like parents are the most important thing, blah, 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 but not it. They don't, it, our culture says it in like a not healthy way. It's like, you know, you're to blame, right? You should do, right? No. You do matter an incredible amount to your kids, but not maybe in the way you've been taught to think. It's your presence. So when you sigh and really connect with your own body and connect with yourself, you're bringing tremendous resources on board. And you may not have had enough experiences in your life to really feel that and know that about yourself, but we all have it. There's a whole section in the book about this, you know, and I can prove it to you because if you practice this, you will start to feel that more and more, that when you're connected to your child, you do have a sense of what to do a lot of the time, not every time, a lot of the time. And as you practice things and say, well, that worked today and that didn't work today, and you gather that information, you're going to have a body of knowledge about your child. Right?
How do you deal with, let's say, old school parents around you? So in-laws, your current parents, even just anyone who's like, oh, I can't believe you didn't put their coat on. Like, what do you do? Like somebody just speaking to you in that moment when you're already on high alert, the kid's freaking out. How do you deal with that? Like, what do you say to people who don't agree with what you're doing?
That's just the should storm talking, right? Because part of the should storm is that voice in your head. It starts early, right? Your auntie in your head going, how could she like that? Right? It's funny how often those shoulds start with how could you, right? How could you? You terrible mother, right?
Right.
And if you can, in a calmer moment, you can sit down and talk with them about what you're doing differently as a parent, you know, and how, hey, like, I know you may not always see it the way I do, but I'm trying to coach my kid to learn how to make good decisions for themselves instead of getting them to obey what I'm trying to get them to do all the time. Right. Again, I don't want that to sound too loose because we still want to have really good standards for our kids and expectations. The modern way of parenting that's more respectful to our children, it's messier and they're not as well behaved when they're younger. I'll be real honest with that. But I can tell you from my own experience, it works, right? I mean, my kids are growing up with a lot of the values of compassion and respect for other people that I had hoped for. And that doesn't mean they're not teenagers and aren't mean sometimes, of course, right? But like us growing up with the shaming and the blaming, by the time we were teenagers, what were we doing to each other? We were shaming and blaming each other, right? You know? So, I mean, I think this is something that's about investing some effort over time. And I often find it takes parents less time than I thought to buy into it. A lot of parents, I'll ask them, hey, can you commit to trying to do seat size and start when you remember to for a week? And I'll get a message in a couple days, right? Like, wow, that's different, right?
Yeah, I love it. One of the final questions I ask each of my guests is, in your opinion, what does it mean to make the health investment? And you can take this however you want to interpret that.
Well, I love the idea of investing in our health, right? And in this case, what we're talking about is investing in the health of the parent-child relationship, but also investing in our health as people who are parents, right? Because as long as we're caught up in the should storm, we're living with anxiety, stress, and a physical stress that's bad for our minds, and it's bad for our physical bodies, right? So just finding a way to be kinder to yourself as a parent and step out of that stress and trust yourself a little more actually has tremendous health benefits for both your mind and your body.
Right. I love that. And I also think, good for us all to reflect on how we treat each other as parents and any judgment we might pass on, just to look at another parent and think they're doing what's best in this moment for their kid and just to trust that versus holding judgment when the kids throw in a tantrum in Target or whatever. And it's like, oh, are they not gonna take care of that or whatever? Just like having more understanding and empathy for people.
And maybe a little compassion on ourselves for the judging too, right? Because judging is a normal feature in the human mind, right? It's how we differentiate things. So I have not gotten to the evolve level where I don't judge anybody, but I do think I'm a little better now at saying, "Oh, I just judged her," but maybe I could sigh and see and get a little curious about what's going on in that situation, right? Maybe there's a reason, for what's going on there that I don't see, right? And frankly, there are some things we ought to judge, right?
For sure.
So
That's true.
abusive behavior, it's okay for us to say, I don't agree with that, right?
Right. No, that's a great point.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time today and sharing your wisdom. Where can listeners follow and find you?
Well, the name of the book is Sigh, See, Start: How to Be the Parent Your Child Needs in a World That Won't Stop Pushing. And you can find that wherever books are sold, or you can go to the website, sighseestart.com.
Aptly
And
named.
yeah, and there's a free chapter to read there, and there's lots of resources.
Awesome. Well, congratulations to you on writing the book. I know what a huge feat and how exciting to have that releasing a new baby into the world.
It really does feel kind of like a baby, yeah.
Well,
But
thank you again so much for being here. I look forward to staying connected with you, and we appreciate everything you shared today.
thank you so much. It was wonderful to be here.
Well, that's all for today. Thanks again for joining me here on the Health Investment Podcast. I'm so grateful for each and every one of my listeners. On your way out, remember to hit subscribe so that you never miss an episode. See you next week. All content in this podcast was created for general informational purposes only by a non-physician. None of the content should serve as a substitute for professional medical advice, treatment, or diagnosis. Always consult a qualified health provider with any questions regarding a medical condition and before making changes to your diet, lifestyle, and/or exercise programs. Do not disregard any professional medical advice you have received or postpone seeking such advice because of something you heard on this podcast.